Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
The specialists are back, and we are here recapping Deal or No Deal Island, episode number 7. Will somebody actually went home this week? What a concept for a competition type show that says they're going to eliminate people in order to get down to one winner. For them to eliminate somebody at the end of the episode, it happened. Kind of didn't happen the way I expected it to, so we'll talk about that. But Will, how does it feel to actually watch somebody's dreams of being the banker's ultimate competition, or whatever the message is, bleeped myself there. How did it feel to actually watch that happen again?
We're back. We're back to eliminating people, and I'm with you in that this was not what I was expecting. I mean, very early on in this episode, it was set up. It's Alyssa versus Stephanie. That's it. There's no one else who can even remotely go home. I guess there's that the chance that Alyssa gets immunity and then they come after Rob or something. But like really right off the bat, we are just pinning these two people against each other. And honestly, all the hate and vitriol at the end, like I don't really know where that came from. Obviously, these two players have been at odds with each other. They're not on the same alliance. They have different goals for the game. But for it to get so personal and heated, I was like, where did this all really come from? And maybe that's something we can figure out. Again, I get it. They're on opposite sides of an alliance. They want to take each other out. That's one thing. That is game related. But these two people ended up like, it felt like we were on a Bravo show or something. Like this, like we don't even get stuff like this on Survivor. And it was so funny because you're on this part of the show where they were having their biggest blowout and argument was on like the Deal or No Deal set, like the studio game show set, which is where you don't see anything like that happen. You know, if this had happened at the beach or at the camp, you know, we might be a little bit more used to seeing something like that. But man, this came out of nowhere. Then Aaron losing it and having to walk off, like it really felt
panic attack.
I was honestly cracking up because it's just like, I know what the show's trying to be, and then fitting like the Deal or No Deal part into it. It's like these two kind of different genres of TV were coming together at the end in a way I haven't really seen before. So that came out of nowhere, and I really, really enjoyed that. Phil, I have a question for you. How many chicken nuggets would you eat right now on this podcast?
Bro, so I already had 3 before this podcast, but I went to Cookout and they give them as sides. So I'm in North Carolina. I'd never had Cookout before. What was his answer? 150? Was
no, it just 50? 40, I think, or 45.
I could eat more than 45 if I was really being put to the test here. If I was on this podcast and I was as hungry as I was about an hour ago, I think I could get through like 60 chicken nuggets, no problem.
60?
Yeah, no problem.
That's
you don't think you could eat 60 chicken nuggets in one sitting?
I mean, I could, but for what purpose or reason would I ever want
to? Well, that's why I was kind of curious about this question.
I'm curious about this question from Joe. Yes.
Why did Joe ask this question?
Okay, so there's a couple things here. Why is he talking? Why is Ben even here at the challenge anyway? He's not really helping. He's standing with like a life preserver, like this life ring. And even Rob looks at him like, if we're drowning, that guy is not coming to rescue us. No. Like, Rob even like rips into him kind of. So he's not there for any actual safety reason. I'm sure they have a safety team and safety divers and a boat. And...
Don't break the illusion, Will. Come on. No, he is there saving everybody's life.
Right. And then Joe, this whole season, like he's had some challenge commentary, sure. But I don't know where this question came from. First of all, why is he talking to Ben during the challenge? Why is this question not even about the challenge? Then where did the chicken nuggets come from? And then why was the answer 45? I mean, it's just confusing on so many levels. I don't know. Is there an inside joke? Is there some reference I'm not picking up on, Phil? I don't know what this all was. I guess I like it. I don't know.
Can somebody in the chat maybe tell us if we missed something on this? Because I agree with you. It came so out of nowhere. And I don't remember any previous references to chicken nuggets. So I don't know why chicken nuggets was the statement unless they just thought it was silly. And Joe was just asking him a bunch of random questions until they got one soundbite. And they thought that was just the funniest soundbite.
This wasn't even a funny, because he's like, how many would you eat right now in front of everyone? It was like phrased in this really specific way that just made
that's what the next show is going to be, is just Ben housing a bunch of chicken nuggets, like the very good looking man that he is.
And it also got me thinking, like, we haven't talked about this at all, the challenges, there's just this like nice pitcher or a dispenser of like iced tea, and it's just iced tea. There's not iced tea, lemonade, water, or like a different type of tea. It's like iced black tea, and that's it. Like, what is going on with that? Like, why is that? Where are the challenges? Because
they're on an island, man. They're on an island. They're on the banker's island. They're wealthy. Wealthy people drink iced tea. Well, also, right now, it's very funny. You're frozen. You could not look worse in this frozen position.
I don't think I'm actually frozen on YouTube. I think I'm frozen just for you because you have shitty internet right now.
No, it's funny. I'm watching it on YouTube. I just went back and checked. You're the one with the shit internet, which makes me very happy. Because I'm watching it on YouTube and you're the one who's all poopy. So yeah, Will loses. So I would just leave and come back in. I think it's
because you're the host of the video, because you're the one who's been traveling and moving around.
We're both hosting. Will is trying to do this rather than just leaving and coming back in and admitting that his is the problem right now. He's trying to blame it on me.
No, I'm not. I mean, I believe you. I'm frozen. I'm just saying I use the same internet and you're the one who's like not home where you currently are. What do? I just leave?
Just leave and come right back in.
Okay.
And I'll tell everybody who's here right now, like the video, subscribe to the channel if you haven't done all of that stuff. Keep putting up with Will, who even when everything is stacked against him, will always believe that he's right. I love this. He can't defend himself. I am doing what Stephanie did after Alyssa went home in this episode. So Will should be back in any second now, and then we can get back going here. Here he is. Will, I use that as time to rip you to shreds when you couldn't defend yourself, much like Stephanie did at the end of this episode to Alyssa. I know you were talking about the vitriol and you're talking about iced tea and you're trying to talk about both of these things at the same time. William Williams says is iced tea in Joe's contract. I don't know. I think they're trying to really lean into like the wealthy country club elegance of this whole thing.
It's like this one touch where they all can stand and they drink ice. It's not like there's other elegance, and iced tea is not even that elegant.
It's very, but I think iced tea like has a very, there is wealth associated with like sitting on a front patio drinking iced tea and lemonade.
Really?
Like, there's definitely wealth associated with that. Maybe not on the West Coast.
I feel like tea is one of the cheaper beverages you could have. Like it's if you go to any restaurant, iced tea is usually a dollar cheaper than a soda. So I don't associate iced tea
with what's weird about this is I guess it's more associated with like Southern wealth. Like it was a big thing, like with like in like the, I don't know, whatever, like the Gone with the Wind era of like, we're going to drink iced tea and sit on this patio. But the fact that this is on an island, I do agree with you. It's kind of weird, but maybe they can't.
Shouldn't you have like fresh squeezed juice or something, like something that's more natural to the.
Ben didn't want to squeeze it. So that was the problem. They couldn't get it done.
I guess. I don't know. As the chicken nuggets were happening, I'm like, what about this iced tea? We never talked about it. And it's not like there's iced tea and like little snacks or little bites or even other options. It's just iced tea. It's just it's just one thing, which is just bizarre to me. So I don't
know. I want to ask you this one. Since we're talking about random stuff, let's go.
A little random.
Let's talk about something a little bit more relevant.
Something's fun in this episode to definitely get into.
Yeah, but I want to start with this.
It's also pretty simple, so I like talking about all the random stuff.
I want to ask you this though: is Boston Rob the greatest gaslighter in the history of reality TV? Is he? Because what I always love about Rob, and it's every show he's on, whether it's Survivor, whether it's this, whether it's The Amazing Race, he is such a negative guy and so villainous. But then when shit starts to hit the fan, he's always the one who's like, you went too far. Oh, this is disgusting. This is so despicable. And what he was doing to Stephanie at the end of this episode, where Alyssa's yelling, and Rob's just laughing. And then once Alyssa's gone and then she's doing it, he's like, wow, you know, I was okay with you doing it while she was here, but now you're just being inconsiderate and disrespectful. And he's playing into it like he's the hero. And then Aaron goes crying away and he's the one who's, this is so messed up, like making her look like the piece of shit when this is exactly what Rob does in so many situations. Is he the best gaslighter we've ever seen on TV? I mean, you know reality TV inside and out. Am I wrong on this?
No, I think that's probably a good take. That's always been a part of Boston Rob's game. And I believe we mentioned this on one of the previous podcasts, how he is playing his Survivor game here fully on this island. And you know, if someone lies or doesn't, you know, isn't completely honest, he goes, oh my gosh, I cannot believe it. I cannot believe you lied to me. Like, he's so shocked when anyone isn't completely 100% honest with him and puts on this guise of being offended and hurt. Like, I can't believe you would do that. I mean, we saw him do that in Marquesas in the very first appearance of reality TV back in, 2002? He was doing the same move. He was trying to gaslight John Carroll. And John Carroll did not buy anybody. He's like, look, dude, I know exactly. You went and told Kathy our whole thing. And it, you know, it hasn't really always worked for him. But he has kept up with it, you know, 20, 25 years down the line. So that's good to see.
It is funny that John Carroll was Boston Rob's first adversary. Now, John Carroll, most people probably don't even know who the hell that is. Because a lot of people probably forgot about him in Marquesas. If you have, you should probably go listen to Will and I and Blake talk about it in our Patreon, because that's Marquesas season we're on right now. And it's a great season. Fun
it's
season.
It's such
to talk
a
about.
Good season. Oh my
God. It's
gosh.
So good.
It's my favorite of the first four after just watching the first four. It is very, very good.
It's such a great season. So definitely consider becoming a patron to listen to that. We're almost done with that season. We jump into Thailand, which I know everybody's dying for, but
cannot wait.
I think the thing that's funny about Boston Rob is John Carroll was his first adversary. And John Carroll really did not cave the way that so many of the people who have competed against Boston Rob in subsequent seasons of reality TV do, or fold under pressure, kind of. Like, you're 100% right. John Carroll just said, no, man, that's not going to work. And then the next time we saw it probably happen that way wasn't all the way until Winners at War, because people could argue that Russell also didn't fold to Boston Rob. But that was the whole Tyson situation with the hot dogs, and that was just a weird situation all around. So I'm going to say it didn't happen until Winners at War, when he tried to instill the buddy system and the other winners said, screw this, we're just going to get rid of Rob. He was successful every time in between there. And so he's just perfected this art where we're now down to the final seven, right? We're down to final seven because it was 4-4. We're down to the final seven. He's on the wrong side of the numbers. And yet he comes out of this episode making Stephanie look like an asshole. And now, you know, next week when they go back to the village or whatever the hell they call
temple
it.
Or the camp.
The camp. Yeah. Cause it's not the temple. The temple's where they play. So back at
right,
the camp,
I didn't know what you meant. Yeah.
Yeah. He's going to be comforting Aaron, and he's going to be the one sitting there going, Stephanie, look at what you did. This is so despicable. Meanwhile, 30 people who he's played Survivor with won't talk to him anymore because he was so vicious with his gameplay. but it's brilliant. And man, is it damn entertaining, because these people just cannot keep up with them.
Yeah. And I mean, we saw this that's how he kind of got Kim eliminated almost. Like Kim was trying to come at him. And then he played this kind of holier than thou attitude against Kim, and people kind of bit. So it does tend to work. And honestly, at this point, we're now 7 episodes into this show. We know that Boston Rob is at least making it to episode 8. And we believe it is a 12 episode run.
Somewhere between 10 and 12. Yep.
I think 12 is where we're landing here. We had a nice little halfway party in the top of this
fireworks,
episode,
baby.
And fireworks. Great. Thanks, banker. And that, you know, that's the top of episode 7. So if they're halfway at the top of episode 7, yes, 12 episodes is making the most sense. Even if Rob goes home next week, though, that means you've had him for 8 full episodes. I think we're okay with the Boston Rob we've got. If he goes home now at any time after this, obviously we're going to be bummed. Like, we're all rooting for Rob, I feel like. And if you're not, I don't know.
The only person you could have rooted for over Rob maybe is Aaron, but with Alyssa, and Alyssa's now gone. So like, those are the only 3 people to root for on the season.
Yeah. I mean, even Alyssa though, I don't know if we ever fully were getting behind her, and it doesn't seem like we want that, you know, we're not getting behind Stephanie as an audience after what took place. So I just look, he's made it to at least 8 episodes. You got to give him a lot of credit. He came in with a huge target on his back. Even now that things don't look good for him, there's still like random ways to get immunity in the show. I'm not saying he's going home next week, but even if he does, he has fully delivered in NBC for whatever appearance fee they paid him. Should be totally happy. Because, man, I mean, what if Rob went out like episode 2? Like, this show, we're not probably not doing a podcast about this show if he goes home episode 2 or 3. So no. It's worked out for Rob, I can say that.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that will probably get him through maybe next week. The biggest thing is, and maybe I'm mistaken, but tonight or last night, we saw the final season preview clip of Boston Rob, which was him and Nick opening the the case and celebrating really hard. They showed that clip at the end of episode 1 when they're like, here's what's coming on Deal or No Deal Island. They showed Boston Rob playing. They showed that. They showed a couple Boston Rob moments. That was the last one they showed. I think we've now seen every single one of the Boston Rob clips that were in that preview. So very well could be that he goes home next week. It was funny.
I don't like doing that so much.
They shouldn't put it out there then.
Yeah, but it seems like you're looking into it a little hard.
I'm not looking into it that hard. I'm just saying we now officially are in the territory where Boston Rob can go home. I was waiting for this case moment.
Okay, so because you've looked at it so hard, are there other clips in that promo that we haven't seen from other players, or was it just, hey, we're going to build this promo off the first 7 episodes, and once we hit 7, we're just not going to include anything?
I'm sure if I went and looked more at it, I could see who has played already and who hasn't played that they maybe didn't show. But my investment in this was only on Boston Rob, so I was only looking at Boston Rob, and I knew what was funny watching this challenge, and we can talk about this challenge, but I knew once he paired up with Nick that this was going to be the challenge where they were going to have the huge celebration. So when they got that wrong the first time and then they had to go back and get the other case, I was like, they're going to end up winning this, because they really highlighted that clip, I think, in 2 season previews. So it just, like, you know, look, it's cool. It's good for them. They're trying to highlight Boston Rob anyway. Maybe it's even better for audiences who are paying attention to that stuff, because then they know that Boston Rob was going to survive. But I do agree with you. If they only get 8 episodes out of Boston Rob out of possible 12, you still got 66.666667% of episodes with Boston Rob. And you pretty much got 90% of your confessionals to be him. You got everything you needed. And then Aaron has been set up as take the reins from Boston Rob. And I think Aaron is going to be in every single episode of the show. So I think that they've gotten what they needed to get for sure out of Boston Rob.
Yeah. Fully. Okay. Let's talk about everything that happened this episode besides Ice Tea and Chicken Nuggets and Boston Rob's future. So I don't know where you want to start. I've already mentioned, like, Stephanie and Alyssa from the beginning. do we want to attempt to break down exactly where things fell apart? Obviously, there was this plan, I think, two or three episodes ago, where everyone was on board to get rid of Kim, and they were going to trade cases with her to put her on the bottom or something to that extent. And Stephanie goes, you know what? No, I like Kim. I don't want to go with this plan. I want to play my own game. So screw you guys. I'm going to do my own thing, and I'm going to steal a case and be safe. And then I think with Claudia, then like nominated herself pretty much to play. But that seemed like it. That was it. Claudia and Stephanie kind of beefed. Claudia's like, I'm going to take the game into my own hands and play for the group. We want to get Kim out. Claudia goes home. And then, yeah, Stephanie at this point is kind of against the group. But then she forms the Night Owls. So she's in this four. I don't really track where it really, really went this dark and downhill between Alyssa and Stephanie. And again, obviously, I know Alyssa was on the plan to get rid of Kim. Alyssa was the one who told Stephanie about it. Hey, this is what we're all doing. Kim's a threatening player. And Stephanie said, I think at some point, sure, I'm in with that plan, even though, you know, she wasn't. And that is lying. Hey, that's fine. But I don't remember it developing to be this hateful. I don't know if you can help fill in those holes for me.
I wish I could, man. Normally, I even try to like make an argument. I'll try to make the pitch. You set me up with something like that, and I'll try to sit here and be like, Will, you missed this. What's wrong with you? The problem is Stephanie has been so minor in this show, and Alyssa's whole relationship that we've seen is her and Aaron. That's all we knew about Alyssa this entire show was her and Aaron. And we knew that she was definitely the one who was playing a little bit more villainous. We knew that that was happening. It was her and Aaron. That's all we heard. And I think probably what ended up happening was she's the more vocal negatively of that pairing. Of her and Aaron, she's the more abrasive. Plus, you have Boston Rob, who could be considered a trio with them. But Boston Rob is so fine-tuned at this point. He knows what to say and when to say it. And he knows the reaction he's going to get. He's playing a game within a game at this point. So I think that if they're constantly butting heads, if it feels like we can't get rid of Rob, we can't get rid of Aaron and Alyssa, Alyssa's probably the one who is driving them the most insane because she's just being the most forthright about everything. I think that probably rubs somebody like Stephanie the wrong way. What shocked me the most and what was the most confusing to me and is the hardest for me to grasp with this is Stephanie showed no personality like this up to this point. So when she started going off, it's almost like the person that's kind of being your punching bag in your friend group suddenly getting really mad and you're all just going to sit there and laugh because you're like, dude, we've already been making fun of you. You cannot get out of this at this point, essentially. When she started going off like that, I was laughing because I was like, are you using this as your big moment for TV or do you sincerely feel this stuff? And where has this been? There's been no buildup. There's been nothing. I was shocked that Stephanie stayed. I thought she was going to lose the game because I feel like Alyssa was the whole story. So yeah, I don't know why this blew up like this.
I completely thought this was Stephanie's episode to go. I was like, especially with how the game was playing out and was only she had a 4 out of 7 chance of saying, which is, you know, a little higher than 50-50, but, you know, there are still 3 cases she could have had that would have led her deal to be a bad deal. So I was thinking, yeah, her time is up. She's had her blow up with Alyssa. Alyssa, Rob, and Aaron are this kind of like love triangle of an alliance. Like, you know, who's winning Aaron's heart? Clearly, Alyssa was in the lead. And so for, yeah, Alyssa to go, it did feel like, huh. It did shock me. I thought totally Stephanie's time. And yes, I just don't know that if this Stephanie hatred, and it didn't even seem like it was just Stephanie lashing out. I mean, it seemed like Alyssa had some choice words for Stephanie also. I don't think she was as, you know, uncomfortable or feeling the heat as much. I mean, Stephanie was heated, man. Like,
this I also think the emotion like, of
she was
winning,
spitting fire.
And then yeah. Once she won the emotion of winning, now but you're this on was that before high,
she so won.
She was also, she was talking shit before that, but I think afterwards it even got more extreme.
Yeah. And then Alyssa was kind of just sitting there like, hey, I'm like, you do you, whatever. But then she kept saying, I mean, I don't know. I feel like if this was going to be such a big point of this episode, and again, this was the entire story of episode 7. It was Alyssa versus Stephanie. We really didn't feel uncomfortable or that anyone else was in a position where they were going to go home. So you'd think that they would have explained how this derailed into this verbal sparring match of hatred. It just seems like it came kind of out of nowhere. Anyway,
I agree. I do agree with you, but I will say this based on that yelling match that Stephanie had where she was like, you know, you're two-faced, this, that, whatever. She's screaming all that stuff. She's like, America will see who you are. I'm all in on Alyssa. Put more of Alyssa's on my TV. Stephanie, you had your big scream moment, but that was it. Like, Stephanie's done nothing for me this season. So Alyssa wins that battle.
And that's kind of what, and I think they, thank you for pointing that part out, because I think that's the part. Like, I'm not even sure what America is supposed to be seeing. We're America. We're watching it. So, like, what is the truth, and why is this so? Like, you, is it really just this? There has to be more to it than just this one plan to get out Kim. And then they both are, like, saying, watch the, like, even Alyssa had, like, play back the tape. And then Stephanie's like, America's going to see. It's like, what are we supposed to be seeing? And
I do feel like as well with Alyssa, we see the very attractive, you know, LA, I don't know what she does, but she's some sort of influencer, befriending like the weird accountant guy, and they're best buddies the whole season. And it doesn't feel like she's using him. It doesn't feel like she's abusing this relationship. So if anything, it's like, we're seeing her cross the lines of like, who she would generally associate with to play this game and who she gets along with. Kind of like when we were talking to Fairplay about Survivor the last weekend, it was, you know, you want to see people from different walks of life who shouldn't get along, who do, like Big Tom and Lex. And it seemed like, okay, here's Alyssa and Aaron, who if they're at the same bar, the same restaurant on the same night, they're probably not even going to talk to each other. But now they play this game and it's great. I didn't see Stephanie build a relationship with anybody. So for me, I'm sitting there going, if Stephanie or Deal or No Deal Island want me to feel some way about Alyssa, I feel positively about Alyssa. I don't feel negatively about Alyssa. I was rooting for Alyssa to come out of this situation. So I just thought it was really, really, really strange all the way around.
Right. Yeah. Again, I do love the blow up for just the setting of it, that they're at the temple and Aaron leaving. I know I'm not like trying to make light of Aaron's feelings, but I couldn't help but be like, holy crap, what
it was
is
great.
Going
it
on
really was great TV.
On this show.
It was awesome.
It was very good TV. It just, it, you get that little taste of like docu-series that we don't often get. And when we do get it, it is delicious.
And I think he was just more bummed that he just lost his friend.
Yeah, he's really mad that Alyssa was gone. And then
now he's going to listen to people talk shit about her. He doesn't want to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Rowan Rollo here says Miranda leaving speech blew things up. I don't remember the Miranda leaving speech.
I kind of remember, I think this is when Joe asked Miranda, who would you have sent home?
That's what it was.
And
yeah.
He says, or she says, Alyssa, which is interesting. We did talk about that, but that to me doesn't answer why Stephanie hates Alyssa with a burning fiery passion and vice versa. So
yeah, it's still out there. You were gonna ask a different question though, so if you
want, I was gonna say, let's go to the challenge and talk about this one. What'd you think?
Why would you ever go into the gold case? Why would you ever do that?
Yeah, I was really confused by this. I thought I had this nailed before the challenge started. I was watching, I'm like, okay, I know what this is gonna be. Especially because in the challenge explanation, they have to get these chests, and in every chest there are two briefcases and there's two players on each team. So it's almost like, I know you're a team and you're building up that amount, but there's two cases for two people, and there's some thematic sense to that, that each person has a case and you're on a team, you add them together. When they showed the inside of this safe in the explanation of the challenge, there's only one case and it's $5 million. And you know, that's the biggest case. So my thinking of this was that, and again, I think they said, hey, it's like risk and reward and all that. We're gambling. We're taking chances. We want to show the banker what we got. I was almost sure that this was going to be, okay, whichever team opens the case, one of you has to get the $5 million case and is guaranteed safety, but one of you is left without a case at all and will 100%. Go and will automatically have to go up against the dealer. And that's for you to decide after the challenge. And I thought that's kind of interesting because we have these random teams. Can they get together and decide that, hey, I want to have complete safety. And you can, you go do it in battle. And if you win, you can take this person out, and there's some decision making there. And then, hey, maybe it's like two people can't decide and they're like, I don't want to go in. I want the 5 million. I want to be safety. Obviously that's the better option. Just take the safety, guarantee yourself till next week. And then I don't know how they would break that tie, but you could, I don't know. There's ways of doing it. But this was like, okay, there's a reward, but also a risk. What was the reward?
There was no reward.
What was the benefit of opening this up? Unless you really think, you know, I want to control my own fate. I want to play the dealer because I can, at least with my odds, I can gain.
But then if you just go out and don't do that one and you go back to try to find a different couple of cases, you can put yourself where you're both safe. Like, you were literally immune if you got the highest cases. So I understand that it was kind of random. But Robin, they only had 3 million, and we watched Alyssa and whoever her partner was throw away a higher value than that. The 4 million didn't get found, so that was still a possibility. There was no reward. And this goes back to, Will, what we complain about almost every week, the biggest complaint we have with this show and what we complain about with the traders every time. And that is, we don't care about what's going into that final case. So this $5 million of like, oh, that'll go up on the board. Who cares? They might not even get it.
Yeah. The final case, it's not something I need to like harp on, or it's like ruining my enjoyment. It's just kind of a big eye roll. It's like, especially as we haven't seen the mechanic of this final case and the influence it has. I mean, maybe once we see the season one finale, that the highest valued case has a bigger role than in just being one case out of 20 in a deal or no deal game. And maybe we've talked about it influences all the values below it, where the higher it starts, every other case is then, you know, certain dollar amounts away, so that like the lowest case is higher than 1 cent or $1, and that it's higher to get to that final case, which has that highest value.
Yeah, that's but possible. I guess, but I, then, and then they say it's a reward though. So like, what is the actual reward?
So that's why this is, and I can kind of vibe with the final case for now, because I don't know what it is. It's still a little wonky, but I can like live with that. This one was so weird because you're right. It said reward, and the reward is that you got to add $5 million to the board for this night's deal or no deal game that you have to play it and might go home. And again, you might open that case in you have to open 7 cases out of what, 14 in the first. So you have a 50% chance of just losing that $5 million case in the first round. And then what's the reward at all? It seemed like there was nothing good in that safe. And that I feel like Amy or whoever didn't play would automatically be safe. And then, I don't know, you need a good team for that. But what you kind of want is something, I don't know, something like that where, I mean, imagine if Alyssa and Stephanie were the team. And they have the safe. And it's like, all right, one of you safe and one of you is going to go play the game. So even whichever one of them plays the game, if they win deal or no deal, they can't even take out their teammate.
What could have been good, just thinking about this, how do you break the tie? They could have had it where you went in there was only one case. So then the two of you had to pick who was going to be the immune team. Well, each one of you picked, and somebody got to pick first and the other person couldn't pick the same team. And whoever was like, you know, whoever got the highest value from that. Because so you're talking about how they were safe, and then you thought that it was going to be where one was going to be safe and then the other one would have to go in and play the dealer. But to give this a reward, it would be, you're going to go in there. There's one $5 million case. Mm-hmm. So your team pulls out that $5 million case. One of you is going to be immune tonight. The other one is going to be up against the dealer. So to break that tie, rather than them having to go one-on-one to figure out who it's going to be, they could have a little piece of paper that just says, each of you will now pick a team that you think has the highest value in their case. And so now you're pretty much picking who has immunity over there, right? Like Boston Rob has immunity. And whoever gets that right, they're then immune. So they're safe. That's their reward for going in and getting the $5 million. But the risk is that the other person now has no choice but to go up and play against the dealer.
I'm not. Sorry, Phil. Not following this at all.
I don't feel like that's that hard to follow.
Everyone gets a note and they have to.
No, not everybody. There's two people. There's teams. There's four teams. There's two people. They get the key. And you're asking, what is the reward for going into the gold? So the reward is one of you will be safe tonight for pulling out this case. The other one, though, is going to face the dealer. But you were saying, how do you break that and determine which one is going to be safe?
Oh, you're just a tiebreaker.
That's all I'm saying. And I'm saying that each person in that team who opens up that $5 million case would then pick who they think is going to have the highest value in their case. Whoever ends up picking the higher of the values, they're immune. So that's your reward for opening up that case. The other person goes in against the deal. That's the risk. But instead, there was just – so I'm just trying to say that's what they could have done to at least give some sort of reward. But there's literally zero reward to this.
There is zero reward. We have a comment here from Melody, who I'll put up. Melody says, the players care because they are holding out hope of winning a large amount of money. The players are there for money. They don't care at this point if we are amused. That's fine. And I'm understanding that. I don't know if a $5 million case for one game of Deal or No Deal, especially like I just outlined, when there's 14 cases and you have to open seven on your first run. So there's a 50% chance that that case is off the board. And you have to open a starting case too. So you are pulling eight cases out of 14 off the board before you even get offered a deal. So there's a greater than 50% chance that that $5 million will be gone. And then that money you win just from this night, it's just added to one case at the end. So our questioning here is that we don't think these final case values or these individual games of Deal or No Deals, the deal you're making, dollar amounts in these games are not influencing the final amount you're going to win that heavily. That's kind of what we're saying. And I get they want to win money. And the other point or, you know, counter argument to this would be like, okay, the players are there for money. They don't care at this point if we're amused. Right, but there's still a TV show that's being
production
produced.
Does. Yeah.
And like the show has to, you know, design the game so that players make it so that it is an entertaining game to watch. That's on the show to do that. And that's with any show. It's got to be fun to watch, and you have to incentivize the players to do things that are fun to watch. So,
and the other thing I will say to this is, you can't win the money unless you're there at the end to win the money. So what I'm having a hard time is, you throw up that $5 million case. It's not like they were getting anything guaranteed even to them for this. So they're taking the risk for the entire group of eight, but one of the two of them is going to have to put their life on the line here. And that just seems like not enough for me. So I feel like out of all the challenges, this was the weakest one by far.
Yeah. I think the safe really was a flop, just because what we're talking about. I didn't feel that there was any reward in that. Then the bottom person is already determined. I prefer it more, and I don't know if we've seen it all that much this season, to be honest. I prefer it more when like the winning team actually has to make a decision on who they're sending to play the banker. So often we are seeing someone be like, you know what? I want to do it. And that's not as interesting as if, oh my God, two people are fearing for their lives. Don't send me. Don't send me. And then two people are like, damn, these people are both in our alliance. We have a dilemma here. We have a choice and we need to figure out who to send. All this, you know what? I want to go play and have my fate in my hands, I think is kind of hurting some of the strategic and decision-making of the show. And then other parts of the challenge, like the safe thing, you know, didn't fully work. Not that it is completely broken or I'm like, this sucked, but it just could have been better, I think. The other part is that you're grabbing chests and they are completely random, which I do think is fine. And then there is this push your luck mechanic with, you know that 4 million is the highest, but you don't know what the other, we don't know what each case, chest value is. You don't have like a list to be like, oh, we got this one or that one. So it's like the fact that Alyssa and who was her partner? Alyssa.
Was it Jordan?
Jordan, yes.
It was Jordan. It was Jordan. Who had a big confessional tonight about what she's playing for. And I was like, who are you? And
yes. So Alyssa and Jordan actually found a chest and they did push their luck. They said, we can get a bigger one. That chest would have, it was more than Boston Rob and Nick's final chest value. So yeah. I didn't mind that part of it. I didn't mind that it was random. I liked the push your luck mechanic. So I liked the paddleboarding. Paddleboarding was fun to me. Rob was fantastic. Rob and Nick just trying to stand up and they're flopping over. And I think because the cases, the chests are random and not labeled. And it was like, okay, you get your first one. Now you have to assess based on, you know, your intuition and your knowledge about the game. You know, there's 4 million. You see what other people are doing. You think there's enough to go on here that you can make a reasonably sound decision. And that adds some levity to the paddleboarding of it all, where the players can be like, all right, we're going to get one of these. No one's racing out for like this particular case because we know it's the highest value and it's a little bit more relaxed. And I did find that to be actually a fun part of the challenge. I don't know if it's the weakest one. I'm trying to think.
I just feel like, I guess what it was the weakest. I feel like all of them so far have been really solid in terms of what the risk, what the reward is. And I feel like in this one, it was not good enough. Cause I think about the arrow shooting one, right? Alyssa climbing up to the top to get her extra 20K or whatever. That was stupid. That didn't matter. But then when they got back, every team still had to shoot arrows. And if you're shooting for the smaller targets and you totally miss, you're going to get zero and you're going to be the one who has to, one of you two is going to go up against the banker. So that was the part that, even though that challenge had a dumber piece to it that I didn't think really worked, at least the risk versus reward mechanism of it worked really, really well. Whereas in this one, the risk versus reward mechanism was coming back, seeing your cases and then saying, should we go back and try to get higher? If we do, we have to get rid of the ones that are in our hands. Is that going to be worth it? That's a good part of the risk versus reward. But the outlier element of this, or whatever it is, you probably know what they actually call, but whatever the safe is, that was a weak risk versus reward. And I think that was the weakest risk versus reward thus far.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I don't know what you would call that, but like a layer.
A layer, yeah.
An added layer to this challenge. I still don't know what happened with the falling, throwing the sandbag challenge with all the case values just being.
That keeps you up at night, huh?
I don't know what went down with that one. I don't know. So,
What else you got? Is there any? This is like our longest Deal or No Deal Allen episode. If you're still watching, like this, our last episode, Will, which we thought was the worst episode of the show thus far, was our highest watched video and our highest listened to over on Spotify and iTunes.
There you go.
So people just wanted to hear us talk about the fact that nobody went home, I guess. I don't know what we did right.
I feel like we do have more to talk about because we get back from the challenge. We know it's Amy or Stephanie and that Nick and Rob have this choice. Now, I just want to kind of think through what you think would have been the smart decision for Rob here. Let's say Stephanie does not volunteer and they're both like, hey, we don't want to play. Or, hey, is there ever something to Stephanie being like, I want to play, I want to do this, and then you pick Amy?
I don't think you do that in this kind of game.
I don't think you do that.
Because in this kind of game, they can just turn it around and screw you next week. It's too easy to get screwed.
And you'll just piss everyone off.
Yeah, you don't want to get personal vendettas.
You need to honor people's respect to go out, you know, in their own terms. Yeah, it's kind of.
But I actually think Stephanie was the right choice for Rob. Because at the beginning of this episode, Alyssa lies to Rob and says, Aaron's thinking about coming for you. What does Rob do? Because he's so good at this shit, he calls it out directly in front of her to Aaron. And Aaron says, no, that's not true. Rob then knows that Aaron's not lying because Aaron, he can tell, was going to lie or not. And then he now knows, don't trust Alyssa. And it puts Alyssa on the spot. It makes her feel like shit. The thing is, I could see Amy, who really has it out for Boston Rob, taking out Aaron had she lost or had she beaten the dealer tonight. Because that would have weakened Boston Rob the most. Whereas Stephanie was playing 100% emotionally. I'm not saying Amy is some wizard over here, but I could have seen Amy taking out Aaron. So I think Stephanie is the right decision because we saw her play emotionally at that other challenge where she almost blew up the entire plan.
Yes. I do think there are some merits to keeping Stephanie and Alyssa both in the game. I think the issue is kind of what you're laying out. If Amy goes and plays, hey, if Amy loses, that's probably option number one. Because then you still have Stephanie and Alyssa. They're fighting. The attention's on them. It's going to be part two of them going head-to-head next week. And you're probably safe if you're Rob, because one of them two has to go. So Amy's your Amy losing is your number one ideal situation. But if Amy goes in, I think you're right. That's probably your worst case scenario, is she takes out Aaron. But I do think there's also a world where she takes out Stephanie, because Boston Rob has immunity. Because we know Amy is Rob, Rob, Rob. Night Owls are all talking about we have to go for Rob. Stephanie's like, no, I got to go to Alyssa. I have a personal thing with her. And Amy's like, this isn't about you. This is about the alliance. We have to do what's for us. Why is Stephanie playing this personal game? We should all be on the same page as the Night Owls alliance. But because Boston Rob had immunity, I could see Amy taking out Alyssa anyway. And then it's the same result with Amy, but you have that upside of Amy going out and Stephanie and Alyssa still being in the game next week. It would have to be something you'd have to really figure out if Aaron is safe or not, because it is, hey, it's higher risk, higher reward. The banker might appreciate that if they were, you know, to put up Amy.
Let me ask you this then. What's the best strategy for this game, do you think? Do you think the best strategy for this game is to play as a total wild card where nobody wants to put you up because they're honestly scared of what you do? Or would that put you at too much risk of them being picked as the person to go home? Or do you think the best is to play this the way that somebody like Nick or Dawson is, or Jordan, where you're literally almost doing nothing, but you're never getting thrown in and you're not the name being thrown around? What do you think?
I think with a lot of these shows, this is a term that has really come to light lately, the floaters. Mm-hmm. If anyone's watched House of Villains, and I think it's a Big Brother term also, but it's the people that float through the game that aren't pissing anybody off, aren't doing anything, and their names never become targets, and then they make it to the end. But with Survivor and Big Brother and House of Villains, those shows, at least, they all have juries. So it's like at the end, if you're a floater, you can't really win because people are like, you didn't do anything, and we don't respect that, and we're not going to crown you champion of this game for not doing anything. Now, in House of Villains, you can maybe argue that. I don't want to spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it. Go watch it. It's on Peacock. So if you're watching Deal or No Deal Island, definitely go watch House of Villains.
Yeah.
Even though I wouldn't agree that there is you know, a floater that won. But in Deal or No Deal Island, there is no jury. So that, like, that risk of playing a middling floater, I think Boston Rob called them sliders, or like slide on through. Mm-hmm. There's no risk of a jury saying, you know what, screw you. It's a straight up elimination game. If you can avoid playing Deal or No Deal, which we say, hey, that's about a coin flip anyway, if you're going to survive or not, which, hey, that's not very good. Like, you go to play, you don't want a 1-in-2 shot of going home when you go play it. So if you can avoid playing Deal or No Deal and then avoid pissing people off, that's the way you play this game. Mm-hmm. Now, I think Boston Rob was in a unique situation that everyone knew who he was, and he had such a big target on his back that he needed to play a more strategic game, make alliances, make sure that he could win immunities, make sure that he could become safe, you know, make sure that other people are fighting and the heat is off him. He had to do more because he couldn't play a floater game, because no one's going to ever look at him as a slider or a floater because, hey, it's Boston Rob. Weren't you on the Villains tribe?
Didn't you win? They thought he was on the Heroes tribe. That's the
funny part. Oh, yeah, the Heroes tribe? I'm like, oh, yeah, you won, didn't you? So he didn't have that choice, but absolutely your best move. And that's your best move a lot. Don't piss people off. Don't make enemies. And don't put yourself up to have a 1-in-2 chance of getting eliminated like so many of these people do. Like, good on Amy for being in the bottom two and getting Stephanie to go play. And you knew Stephanie was never going to come at you. Like, kudos to Amy here.
I agree. I do agree.
And I don't totally know if they agree. Talked about that. I think they talked about this during the challenge. And I think once Stephanie even let out a hint of, I want to play and eliminate Alyssa, I think Amy's like, you know, let's do it. Let's do it.
Because especially
then you're completely safe.
You're a 0% chance of going home, even though you technically aren't immune. There's a 0% chance that she's going to vote for you, and she's willing to take a 50% chance of going home. So just sit there and smile.
Yeah, no, really, really well done by Amy. So maybe Amy's our secret strategist, Phil.
How are they going to break the final three then? Because with how this game is structured right now, how do you think they're going to get there? With like the final two, I guess, not even so much the final three, because then you could go win and point people out. But how are they going to do the final two? One person plays, the other person sits there and hopes they lose.
I feel like we've been building up to the final person remaining, like plays in.
How do they get to that final person? Is what I'm asking.
I know that's right. I'm just setting up that I don't think there's going to be someone watching, waiting, and if they make the person makes a bad deal, then that person just wins. Because then what do they win? What's the money? What's the point of the final case value? Maybe there is a jury. You know, maybe they get down to a final two and everyone that was in the game votes on who should be the winner. And then that winner has a chance to go play the final game of Deal or No Deal with this massive case that could be picked on the first run.
Yeah. We'll see what ends up happening. William Williams says Amy Aaron is finale material. That would be fun. That would be fun. I feel like it's either that or Boston Rob is making it. But Nick, Dawson, Jordan, and Stephanie, I don't feel like they're going to be the ones who are competing. I feel like it's going to be one of the other three.
Yeah, Amy has come on here a bit.
Yeah, she has. I think Amy, Aaron, Boston Rob, that's kind of where we're sitting here. All right, we good? We done? We talked enough?
I think so. It was a fun episode.
It was good. I can't believe we just did 50 minutes talking about Deal or No Deal Island. It's been a while since we've gone that long on anything but Survivor. So welcome. That's good. Like that. Thank you all for listening. If you made it this far, like the video, subscribe to the channel. We finally hit 10,500, so that's always a nice feeling.
Well, let's get to 11,000. I mean, come on. If you're watching Deal or No Deal Island with us,
why are you not subscribed? If you're listening to this, again, if you're listening on Spotify or iTunes, come over and subscribe. It's so much harder for us to track the numbers on Spotify and iTunes because it's not just like subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. Like you're listening, that's good. But we need the subscribers over here on YouTube. It's helping us with the algorithm here. And hey, numbers are going up. Episode 6 of Deal or No Deal Island, our best episode ever in terms of views. So welcome. So thank you all so much. Become a patron, patreon.com/thespecialist. It's worth it. We got a whole bunch of stuff going on over there. I'm recording a casting episode with Blake after this that we are going to throw up on Wednesday for our $10 and $20 patrons. As we were talking about earlier, Marquesas. So if you're loving Boston Rob and you want to hear people talk about Marquesas, go become a $20 patron. We're talking about Marquesas through April 18th. That's going to be our last episode talking about Marquesas. So thank you all so much, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.